This is your WWE Payback 2020 review right here on the Solemn Monster Sounds Up YouTube channel. I am the Solemn Monster. It is Sunday, August 30th, 2020. The final stream, the final pay-per-view for a very packed month of August. And I am so happy that you guys have chosen me for your Payback coverage here tonight. 1 week after SummerSlam, they didn't waste any time. They come right back with another pay-per-view. And I think the verdict on this pay-per-view, this was a very middle-of-the-road show overall, I think, in terms of in-ring action. This was not a show that was really designed to have a whole bunch of great matches. When this show was over, I looked back and I said, it moved a whole bunch of stories along. We had some new champions crowned. We had Randy Orton putting over Keith Lee, which was a big deal. The Golden Role Models take one more step towards the inevitable breakup that we've seen coming for about 6.5 years now. It feels like that's how long this has been going on for. So they moved all those stories along, but, you know, there really wasn't anything spectacular about this show. There really was no need for this show. There were things that could have played itself out over the next several weeks until Clash of Champions, which they gave 2 dates for, by the way. One was right, one was wrong. You guess which one was right, I'll tell you which one was right. There was stuff here that could have happened at SummerSlam. This was an experiment. They were trying something new. Honestly, to me, this was probably a slight thumbs up. There really wasn't anything horrendous on this show aside from some thoughts I have on the main event, which we will get into. They got to the right place. They got to the right place with that main event. As far as how they got there, I thought it was very lazy. I thought it was very lazy for a couple of different reasons, not the least of which was rehashing the ring collapse yet again. How many times have we seen this ring collapse? It can never be as good as it was the first time, but this was probably the third or fourth ring collapse that they've done. I mean, really, again with the ring collapse. Are we completely so devoid of ideas that we have to just keep recycling that one cool one over and over and over again? But we'll get into all that. By the way, we broke 59,000 subs on the channel tonight. I was hoping we would do it by the end of the night. We did it about an hour and a half ago. So I thank all of you for subscribing to the channel. If you're not subbed, please hit that sub button before you leave. So let's start with the kickoff match, shall we? Let's go all the way back to the pre-show because we had a tag team match on there. It was Liv Morgan and Ruby Riott against the Iconics. That was the pre-show match tonight. The story here, again, furthering the story along. They've been playing some of these stories out on TV now for weeks, and they were just moving things along. Kind of like a glorified episode of Raw or a glorified episode of SmackDown. That's really what this show was. So the story here was Liv Morgan not fully trusting Ruby Riott. The Iconics have been messing with their heads now for weeks, planting seeds of doubt about whether or not you guys are really friends or not. That's what the Iconics have been doing. Peyton Royce had Ruby in trouble when Billie Kay ran around to the other corner. So Billie Kay is not the legal woman. She goes running around to the corner, and she tries to yank Liv Morgan off the apron, but Liv holds on to the rope. So as she's holding on to the rope, Peyton Royce knocks her off the apron, but she didn't see it. That's the key here. She didn't see it happen. So she gets knocked off the apron, and they're trying to convince her that it was Ruby. They're trying to convince her now that it was Ruby Riott who's the one who knocked her off. And Liv Morgan, tears in her eyes, is teasing walking out. She's not going to stick around. She's going to leave. But then she comes back, tags herself in. And the finish here was Liv hitting the double knees to Billie Kay while Ruby caught Peyton with the Riott kick for the win. Basic stuff. I mean, it's a very basic match. I didn't think it was that good, to be honest with you, but they told the story they wanted to tell. The Riott Squad is back together. All is well. They can trust each other. They're bosom buddies again. They went over to the announcers on the pre-show panel. Charlie Caruso, JBL was there. Peter Rosenberg, Booker T. And they were celebrating. They made up. Can you forgive me? So all is well with the Riott Squad, who I fully expect to be the next women's tag team champions. That's my prediction anyway. We have new champions, by the way. We'll talk about that. Pay-per-view itself opened with Bobby Lashley. The almighty Bobby Lashley. challenging Apollo Crews for the United States Championship. Lashley was acting a little too cocky, a little too arrogant early on for his own good. And he dropped Crews with a Dominator, gave him a very lazy cover. Apollo kicked out. Crews made a comeback, took him out with a crossbody. We had a spine buster by Apollo, followed by the standing moonsault. Lashley kicks out. Crews hits two straight German suplexes and a frog splash to Bobby Lashley. And the announcers screamed, "It's over!" Did I just not get done talking about this last week? Did they not do the exact same thing in SummerSlam last Sunday? What match was it? I forgot what match it was. The match is over! It's gotta be over! No, it's not. I didn't think it was over anyway, but thanks for confirming it. So, of course, it was, in fact, not over. So Lashley goes for the full Lashley. It's not the full Nelson anymore. It's not the full Nelson. It's not the Master Lock. Because it wouldn't make sense if it was the Master Lock, right? But they call it the full Lashley. Which, again, when I hear that, I don't need to see the full Lashley. We already get half the Lashley from, like, the waist up. That's enough for me. Puts him in the full Lashley. This time, though, he takes him down with the body scissors. And that was it. Not only was that the end of the match, Apollo Crews did not waste any time. Apollo Crews did not struggle and fight to get out of it. He didn't struggle to reach for the ropes. He immediately tapped out. He did not waste any time at all. And Bobby Lashley is the new United States champion. They had a photographer at ringside taking pictures, and they had this cool little effect where he would take a picture, and then immediately on screen, you got these like still shots of him and his boys posing in the ring. As all of this is going on, here comes Apollo Crews attacking them from behind and running off. You know, I saw a whole bunch of people online talking about, oh, you know, what a sore loser, you know, and all that. And maybe that's true, but I look at it a different way. I look at it and I think to myself, you know what? It's nice to see somebody who actually gives a shit about losing his championship. Apollo was hot about losing that belt. And he lost his mind. He attacked him and then he ran away and he said, I'm going to get that belt back. I like that. Far too many times people lose championships and it doesn't seem to bother them. It doesn't seem to always be that big of a deal. Sasha Banks on TV this week was very upset about losing her Raw Women's title. Good. People should care. They should show that they care about losing their championships. And I'm just so used to, in this company over the years, people losing titles and not really caring. And why would they? I mean, most of the time, they're going to get a rematch anyway, right? The whole automatic rematch thing that I guess they did away with. But anyway, so he wants his belt back, and that's fine, but he ain't going to get it. Bobby Lashley winning the championship was the right outcome. He did not win the WWE title from Drew McIntyre. They had a great match on pay-per-view a few months ago, Backlash, I think it was. But if Bobby Lashley, as much as they've been building him as this destroyer, if he can't go in there and win the U.S. title, then there's no hope for him. What title can he win, if not for the U.S. title? They're pushing the Hurt Business as a big faction on Raw. I like the Hurt Business. I think MVP is great in his role. It's really cool to see Shelton Benjamin back on TV in some kind of a prominent role. I thought his days were done. They brought him back to the company and didn't do shit with him. Remember those segments on TV that they did where he would look in the camera and he would look off like, Yeah, that was his gimmick for a while, and after 2 weeks, they dropped it. That was their bright creative idea for Shelton Benjamin. Now they have him in a role on TV. I like that. But you've gotta get the gold on Bobby Lashley if you want people to look at him as any kind of a real threat. He's got to win, so it was the right outcome. I'll say 6 out of 10. I'll go 6 out of 10. I thought this was a good match. Again, nothing spectacular, but I think 6 out of 10 is fair. Oh, by the way, I want to mention this. Shout out to Sam. Sam is one of the listeners of my show, and he tweeted me earlier, and he had just a thought, and I thought it was actually a very interesting thought, and I agree with him. I think it's actually a really good idea. You know, we've seen Cedric Alexander on TV now, who was not on this show. They didn't do anything with Cedric or any kind of turn or anything, but they've been planting the seeds that Cedric Alexander is kind of the odd man out sometimes, and Your friends don't really care about you. MVP says, my offer is still open if you want to come join us in the Hurt Business. So they really want you to think that Cedric is going to turn and join the Hurt Business. And Cedric is a very talented guy. So is his wife, you know, Big Swole in AEW. I love Big Swole. Cedric is a talented guy. There's a lot of talent running in that family. But you know who's more talented, in my opinion? You know who the real crime of it is that they have him doing absolutely nothing right now? Is his partner. There was so much fanfare around Ricochet coming into WWE. Ricochet is like a walking human video game. You know, people look at him and go, oh, he does a lot of flippy shit. Well, okay, fine. You know what? He does a lot of flippy shit. He does it better than anybody else. He is an incredible athlete. He can do things that the human body should not be capable of doing. But what do they have him doing? Nothing. He's in the back. He's not doing anything. When he's in the ring, he's getting squashed in 90 seconds. What are they doing to Ricochet? That is the most egregious misuse of talent, maybe in the entire company. I mean, I know I got hot about the Chad Gable thing on the podcast earlier, but his idea was, what if the big swerve here isn't so much that Cedric is the one who turns, but it's Ricochet. And Ricochet goes heel, and Ricochet ends up in the Hurt Business. I like that idea. I like that better than Cedric being recruited into the Hurt Business. Then we can get some Cedric-Ricochet matches out of it. Ricochet needs a harder edge. Ricochet needs to... There just has to be a complete revamp of his character and how he is portrayed on TV. Mark Henry made a comment about Ricochet just recently. He said he wishes that Ricochet would get angry. He wishes that he would just pop off and start pissing people off. And you know what? That's easy for Mark Henry to say. Mark Henry's a Hall of Famer. Mark Henry's the established veteran. So on the one hand, it's like, yeah, well, that's easy for you to say. But if you're in Ricochet's shoes, do you really want to go around pissing people off backstage? You know what, though? I agree 100%. I wish Ricochet would get angry. I wish he would start to become difficult. Just fuck it. Maybe that's what he needs to do. Maybe he needs to have an attitude. Maybe he needs to have a chip on his shoulder. And I'm not just talking about on TV. He's the one who they should be pushing and doing something with. So if that's the swerve, I love that idea. We've got Keith Lee. Keith Lee had quite the debut for himself on Monday. As I'm sure you all recall, he ran into JBL. Or I should say JBL came into the dressing room to go meet with Keith Lee. And JBL wanted to offer him a tip on some big hedge funds. Because, you know, JBL's a big stock guy. Big into the financial markets. So he wanted to offer him some tips on some hedge funds. He goes, it's only $1 million to buy in. Just a million. Just $1 million to buy in. And Keith Lee tells him that he doesn't have those kinds of funds. He doesn't have those kinds of resources. And then JBL went and blocked him on Twitter. Well, he probably did. I don't know if he did or not. He probably did. But he tells Keith Lee, well, you know what? If you win your match with Randy Orton tonight, you'll be on your way. And that was it. That was the whole segment. He walked away. Nothing really came out of that. No, he's not going to manage Keith Lee. I saw some of that nonsense tonight. What sense would that make? But then again, you know what? This is the same company who put Zeb Coulter together with Alberto Del Schmucko. And obviously that didn't work out too well. So I put nothing past these people. But no, I don't think JBL is going to have any involvement with Keith Lee. It was just a segment for them to do. Hopefully, Keith Lee does not need JBL. We have Big E against Sheamus. This was Big E's first pay-per-view match of his singles run. I don't remember if Big E had a singles match. I mean, when he first came in, he was doing the singles thing. He was with Dolph and AJ Lee. He may have had a pay-per-view singles match back then. I'm talking about the current run. This is his first pay-per-view singles match. And he went for an apron splash early on in the match on Sheamus. Got some height on it. Sheamus rolled out of the way, and Big E just splatted on the apron. And with that, Sheamus went on the attack. 80% of this match, 85% of this match, was Big E selling his knee. Sheamus was working over the knee and the leg. Always an exciting thing for a pay-per-view match, 85% of which is just selling a body part. But he was working over the knee, all kinds of moves, single leg crab. He gave him a modified sharpshooter at one point. He got him in either, it was either a knee bar or a heel hook. I think the announcer said a heel hook. I will not take the announcer's word for it. Let me say this, because I'm going to get into this as we go along here. I thought the announcing sucked tonight. There were moments, Michael Cole, whether it's being fed to him or I don't know, but there were comments he made, both of them, but more so Cole, I think, tonight. Awful. Awful. The announcing was just absolutely dreadful on this show, at least from the SmackDown side. So they call it a heel hook. Yeah, well, I guess I'll have to take their word for it. But Big E did get the spot in where he delivers the spear through the ropes. Took Sheamus down to the floor. Big E landed right on his shoulder. I used to talk all the time about how I wish he would, you know, tone that down. Don't use it in every match. He's going to blow his shoulder out. He's been doing it for like 8 years now. And somehow, you know, Big E's a big dude. He's got a lot of muscle mass, and he lands right on that shoulder, and apparently he's okay. I still say, though, after years and years and years of doing that move, you know, look, it's going to catch up with you. And now he's getting a big singles push. So can you imagine, like, he's getting a singles push, and let's say he elevates himself up the card into, like, championship territory, and then his shoulder just gives out. Like, I still think it's crazy for him to do that in every match, but whatever. I mean, he's been able to stay injury-free so far. I just think it's a risk not worth taking. Big E got him in the ring, went for the big ending, which is where Sheamus transitioned into that heel hook I mentioned. Sheamus charged in for the bro kick. He was going for the finish, but Big E scooped him up into a power slam and then finished him off with the big ending. This was Big E's most challenging match to date. It's the most that he has had to fight from underneath. So that was kind of the story of the match. His toughest opponent to date in Sheamus. Two big guys just beating the hell out of each other. I figured we were going to get a Sheamus win here, just because that's WWE's MO. Sheamus got pinned by Big E a few weeks ago. He got rolled up, what else is new, on TV. And he walked out on Miz and Morrison in the six-man tag on Friday. So I figured, all right, if they're going to keep this thing going, then he'll get some kind of fluke win. He'll steal a win over Big E. And then Big E can come back and get his win back. But you know what? To their credit, they put Big E over. Big E is the guy that they're pushing right now. He's the guy who needs it. They put the right guy over. Great. I didn't think they would. I figured they were going to do the Sheamus thing and bring it back. And look, they still might bring it back. But you know what? If they bring it back, you know who should win? Big E. Sheamus is not the one that they're trying to push here. Big E is the one they're trying to push. Big E is the one they're trying to establish as a single star. Sheamus is already a single star. He ended up losing the Jeff Hardy feud. He'll lose this one too. And you know what? He'll be okay. Sheamus has been around a long time. He's won every championship there is to win, with the exception, I guess, of the Universal and the Intercontinental. He wants to win the Intercontinental. He has talked about that. It means something to him. So when he wins that championship, and I think he will, that's going to mean something to him legitimately. But I thought the match dragged in the middle. I enjoyed it. It dragged. I'll go 6 out of 10. You know, I'll go 6.5. I like this better than the opener. I'll go 6.5 out of 10 on this. So Big E afterwards was all fired up. He goes over to Corey Graves. He's just, you know, all fired up. Bring it on. You know, I'm ready. I'm here. And with the talking smack stuff with The Miz, and they showed highlights of it, they're at least acknowledging the fact that, hey, you know, you can't be all jokey all the time if you want people to take you seriously. I like what they do on Talking Smack, because clearly it's worked shoot. They want to get people talking. This show has been back for 2 weeks, and everybody is talking about some of these Talking Smack clips. It's very smart. You straddle that line between work and shoot, you get people talking. So I'm glad they brought that show back. But I like the fact they're acknowledging that and they're making it part of the story. I think we're going to see Big E slowly transition away from too much of the funny ha-ha stuff, which he needs to do. I think he needs to get away from some of that if he's going to be positioned with the big boys up top. I'm not saying he should be, just strip him of all of his charisma. But some of the stuff he does, you got to tone that down. You're going to be fighting for the WWE title or the Universal Championship. He has to transition into, you know, a certain seriousness that he's been lacking for a while. We saw some of that shine through tonight, which I think is good. And there's nothing wrong with being entertaining. The Rock was very entertaining. But The Rock knew when to drop that and get serious. And Big E needs to do the same thing. Everybody has to evolve. Everybody has to evolve at some point. They have a new backstage interviewer. Her name is Elise Ashton. She introduced Matt Riddle, and I quote, as the bodacious barefoot bro. That's what they called him. The bodacious barefoot bro. Now, when Matt Riddle was in NXT, I don't recall them calling him the bodacious barefoot bro. You know why? Because they didn't have to. Not everybody needed some silly fucking name. On the main roster, though, you need a silly name. Bodacious barefoot bro is pretty silly. I wish I never hear them refer to him that way again. It's just the state of these names. My God, the state of some of these names. My God. At least the one they have for Shayna Baszler, I don't mind so much. They call her the submission magician. And that's corny, but you know what? That doesn't bother me as much. The bodacious barefoot bro. Are you kidding me? We all know who comes up with these names. We all know who comes up with these names, right? I mean, we don't even have to debate this. We all know who came up with this name. It was not Matt Riddle, I can tell you that. By the way, this is after Michael Cole, earlier in the night, referred to Keith Lee. I can't believe I forgot to mention this. He referred to Keith Lee, I think it was Michael Cole, as effervescent. That's an actual word they use to describe Keith Lee. Effervescent. So now he's an Alka-Seltzer tablet. Great. Wonderful. So Elise asked Riddle for his reaction to a tweet that Baron Corbin posted. I couldn't see the tweet because Baron Corbin blocked me some time ago. I'll try to pick up the pieces of my shattered life and move on. I'm sure there must be some support group for people like me, those who have been blocked by Baron Corbin, by Baron Shitface. But anyway, he posted a tweet, I guess saying that Matt Riddle would be a failure in the ring like he has been a failure at home. Yes, they are acknowledging, they are working into the story here, the very real life public admission recently by Matt Riddle that he cheated on his wife some time ago. I say some time ago. He cheated on his wife last year. It's not that long ago. So that's what they were kind of getting at. And with that, Riddle went from smiling to a very, very serious look. And then he walked off. So we had Matt Riddle against King Corbin. We still don't know what this King's Ransom is, by the way. Apparently the King's Ransom didn't work out so well. The King's Ransom was to anybody who could take out Matt Riddle. And nobody was able to do it. So I guess there's no more ransom. But they never explained what it was or how much it was. What kind of currency or denomination it was. Maybe it wasn't money. I said it on the podcast earlier, episode 667. I said, maybe it's a gift card to the Olive Garden. I was looking all night long. I was looking inside the Thunderdome for Virgil. I thought he was going to run out. Then I'm looking in the little Thunderdome boxes to see if Virgil is there. Didn't see him anywhere. So Corbin clothesline Riddle in the ring. Riddle comes in. He's doing his entrance. He kicks off the flip-flops. And then boom. Corbin barrels over him with a clothesline. Michael Cole said that Booker T, I guess maybe this happened on the kickoff show. I must have missed this part. But he said that Booker T called Corbin, or said that Corbin could be one of the greatest big men, or could go on to be one of the greatest big men in WWE history. So if you were wondering if they have open bar at catering inside the Thunderdome, there's your answer. So Corbin slowed things down for a while. Riddle hit the running forearms in the corner, hit the Broton, and a running knee for a near fall. Corbin came back, hit the deep six, got a near fall of his own. Riddle hit the Bro to sleep and connected with the floating Bro off the top rope and got the clean pin right in the middle of the ring. 1, 2, 3. Matt Riddle pins King Corbin. And Michael Cole called this an upset victory. Now keep in mind that on his very first night on SmackDown, Matt Riddle beat AJ Styles, who I think at that time was already the new Intercontinental Champion. But beating Baron Corbin apparently is some great upset. No, it's not. No, it's not. Beating Baron Corbin is no upset. You know what's upsetting? I'll tell you what's upsetting. What's upsetting is that this feud is going to continue. We've seen the babyface conquer the king. He beat Baron Corbin. Nobody was clamoring for this in the first place. I called this before Riddle even came up to SmackDown. I said, you watch, his first feud is going to be with Baron Corbin. I said, look at the talent they have on the SmackDown roster. You've got Daniel Bryan. You've got Chad Gable. You've got all these different people that he could have worked with. AJ Styles, which he did on night one. But I said, you watch, the first person he's going to feud with, I can't wait for that Baron Corbin feud. And sure enough, his first real feud is with Baron Corbin. And he won. Great. Great. But no, it's got to continue because he went to the back and Baron Corbin attacked him and he was punching him and Riddle is laying on a table and the table has fruit and food all over it and it collapses. So technically he put him through a table. I mean, the table just gave way. So this feud is going to continue. There's absolutely no reason for this feud to continue. None whatsoever. Riddle won. Riddle won as he should have. Please let us move on from this. 5 out of 10. I go 5 out of 10 on this match. I really wasn't a big fan of this match. I got to be honest with you. I really wasn't. So I'll go 5 out of 10. Then we get to the golden role model, Sasha Banks and Bayley, defending the Women's Tag Team Championships against Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax. The absurdly awful commentary. This is a running theme throughout this pay-per-view. I can't stand it. It's fucking atrocious. So Michael Cole is talking about Shayna Baszler. And he refers to Shayna Baszler as the protege of Ronda Rousey. Now, the first thing I thought of when I heard this, do you remember that scene from The Princess Bride? If you've never seen this movie, by the way, then shame on you. You need to go watch it. Andre the Giant is in that movie. But in The Princess Bride, Inigo Montoya has the quote where he says, "You keep using that word. I don't think that you know what that word means." Or I think it was like, I do not think that word means what you think it means. That's exactly what I thought of when I heard Michael Cole say this. Shayna Baszler is not the protege of Ronda Rousey. She's friends with Ronda Rousey, very good friends with Ronda Rousey. But Shayna Baszler was fighting years before Ronda Rousey was fighting. Shayna Baszler was wrestling years before Ronda Rousey was wrestling. And Howard Stern is my protege. The fuck out of here. Michael Cole is a moron. Talented, but he's a moron. So the story of the match was Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax trying to work together, even though they don't like each other. These two women do not like each other. We had Shayna Baszler on SmackDown on Friday night call Nia Jax all kinds of names, and then flat out say, "I think you suck." And I said, "Bravo." Certainly of all the women in this match, Nia Jax was at the bottom of the pecking order in terms of in-ring talent. But to her credit, everybody in this match carried their weight. They carried their load. They did their part. I thought the match worked well. That was part of the story, was that they weren't getting along. But then you have this other story of Sasha and Bayley and everything they've been through. And last week, what happened? Sasha Banks loses her championship. Bayley keeps hers. Sasha, though, loses hers. And this is the only championship she had left. And so she wanted to go out there and make sure that she could at least hold on to that tag team title. It did not work out for her. It did not work out very well for Sasha Banks. So we had Sasha grabbing at Nia's leg. That caused the distraction. Bayley threw Baszler, who was the legal woman, into Jax, knocked her off the apron. Nia was favoring her knee out on the floor. And Nia just came back not too long ago from double ACL surgery. So they tried to play it up that she's had knee issues in the past, which she has. Nia came back into the match. She was dominating for a while. I got scared. She had Sasha Banks outside the ring, and she was whipping her back and forth, head first, into the barricade, this way, then that way, then this way, then that way. And we know what Nia Jax is capable of when she's in the ring with certain people or outside the ring with certain people. Sasha Banks is kind of fragile. She's had injury problems in the past. I was just hoping, please, please let this woman be okay after this. Nia's flinging her around. Nia was in the ring. She attempted a leg drop. Bayley went back to work on the leg. You got to chop that tree down. Nia was the biggest person in the match. And what do you do? Strategize, right? You got to take her down. You cut the knees out from under her. Her knees are her weakness. It's her Achilles heel. So she was trying to take her knees out. A little bit later on, Nia went for a power bomb. Sasha countered. Bayley hit a flying elbow and knocked Shayna off the apron. Sasha hit a frog splash and got the near fall. She got a close near fall on the frog splash. So Sasha and Bayley gave Nia a double back body drop. Thankfully, Nia tucked her head. That was a little scary, but she tucked her head. Baszler, though, made the blind tag. So Shayna comes into the match, and I will say this. I thought the match was not bad, but the finish is what made this match. I thought the finish of this match was really cool. I thought the finish of this match was actually very cool, I must say. Shayna put the Muda Lock on Sasha. I think it was like tying up her legs and stuff. At the same time, she got Bayley locked in the Karafuta Clutch. So she has a submission on each of these women. She doesn't even need Nia Jax. She's beating these two by herself. And they're screaming and writhing in pain, and Sasha's trying to put her arm over to, like, help and, like, break the hold. And Shayna takes Sasha's arm, and she positions it across Bayley's throat as if Sasha now is choking out her own partner. So they're all tied up like a pretzel. Bayley is in pain. She's got nowhere to go. And all that's doing is applying more pressure to Bayley, and Bayley has no choice but to tap out. So Bayley taps, and we've got new women's tag team champions. After the match, Charlie Caruso gets in the ring. She's trying to interview Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax. They obviously said to Nia, look, when the match is over, just act like you're on drugs or you're drunk. Because that's what she acted like. She was so annoying here. I guess that was her role. My God, was she annoying here. She cut off Shayna when she was trying to do her promo. She's looking in the camera. She's celebrating. You know, she's like, what? What? You know, she's acting like a douche. Shayna's looking at this like, what is this? So they're going to be the odd couple tag team. That's going to be the dynamic between them. They have nothing in common. They don't like each other. But they're the tag team champions, and now they're going to have to coexist. We've had tons and tons of odd couple champions over the years, tag team champions in WWE. And that's obviously the role now that they're going to play. But Sasha and Bayley were devastated. They were in the aisleway. They were crying. They were devastated by the loss. Sasha Banks goes from having two belts a week ago to no belts. She's now no belts Banks. 6.5. I'll say 6.5 out of 10 on this match. This one here was the most predictable outcome on the pay-per-view. I mean, everybody should have seen this coming. The moment they announced that they were going to defend the belt at Payback, even before SummerSlam, I called it. Everybody should have called it. As soon as the match was announced, we didn't even know who the opponents were going to be. It should have been apparent that that was where they were going to drop the tag team titles. So even though it was predictable, I thought that finish was really cool. And look, it's the logical next step in the breakup of the role models. This had to happen. They're moving that story along, finally. I mean, I'm all for long-term storytelling, but, you know, I'm sure the pandemic screwed up their plans. SummerSlam last Sunday was supposed to be held in Boston. I have no doubt in my mind, not a doubt in my mind, that if it wasn't for COVID, One of the big matches at SummerSlam last Sunday would have been Bayley defending the SmackDown Women's Championship against Sasha Banks. Not just because it's Boston, Sasha's hometown. It was the 5-year anniversary of that classic match at TakeOver Brooklyn between Sasha Banks and Bayley. The greatest women's match in WWE history. The greatest women's match I've ever seen. It was fantastic. It was so good. They just had a documentary they just uploaded to the network all about that match. I haven't seen it yet. I heard it's very good. That match was fantastic. It was the 5-year anniversary. I'm sure that they would have been building to a match that weekend. 5 years to the weekend. And COVID screwed everything up. So they took their time. They dragged it out a little bit more. I don't think you can wait until WrestleMania to do the first match. WrestleMania is a long way away. You could do a match at WrestleMania, but it won't be the first one. So it feels like they're finally pushing this thing along. Maybe Survivor Series. Maybe Survivor Series will be the first match between them. That would be my guess. Just like Liv and Ruby. I don't know when, but I think Liv and Ruby are probably going to be next up. Once they're done with this Shane and Nia stuff, I don't think that's going to last long. So I think that's who's going to get those belts next. That would be my guess. That would be my guess as far as who gets those belts coming up next. We got a lot of people in the chat. I want to thank everybody who's tuned in right now live on a Sunday night, final Sunday here in August. We've got almost 2,300. A lot of super chats coming in. I'm going to get to all of those a little bit later. I love it. Thank you for the support. It means the world to me. So if you want your message to pop up on screen, you see that little dollar icon down there. Feel free. Entirely up to you. But now we get into the real meat and potatoes here on this show. Randy Orton. Randy Orton against Keith Lee. Somehow, Keith Lee's music is even worse than it was on Monday night. It's pretty much the same, but they changed something about it, and it just sounds like dog shit. It just sounds terrible. But I told people, I said, look, if you're that bothered by the music, like I talked about the music already. I think the music sucks compared to the music he had before. But at the end of the day, it's music. If it bothers you that much, I said the perfect solution, when he comes out, mute the audio, bring up his song in Spotify, and play Keith Lee's theme music. It's still on there. Or bring it up on YouTube or whatever, and you'll have his theme music. Unfortunately, his gear is still a work in progress. It was better than it was on Monday. They got him out of the skirt. Keith Lee wasn't wearing the skirt tonight. That's good. Keith Lee was not wearing the skirt tonight. So it was marginally better. He had like this green gear on. Still had the shirt. But enough about all that, right? Forget the gear. Forget the music. Forget the effervescence. The effervescent Keith Lee. Fuck all that. It comes down to the match. This guy just debuted on Monday night. He lost his first match. Granted, it was a DQ, but he lost. What are they going to do tonight? Are they really going to beat Keith Lee 2 matches in a row? His first big pay-per-view match. They're going to beat this guy? I picked him in my predictions. I said, they have to do the right thing. I understand Randy Orton is next in line for a rematch with Drew McIntyre. That's set in stone. Randy Orton can win. He can lose. It doesn't matter. Keith Lee has to win. He needs this win more. And I was hoping they would do the right thing. So they get into the ring here, and early on, Orton is chopping this guy and chopping him, and all it's doing is making him angry. It's just pissing him off. Then he gives him Grizzly Magnum, the double chop to the chest, and down goes Orton. Lee charged Orton in the corner. Orton moved, and Lee posted himself shoulder first. Outside, Randy Orton got him up. He picked him up in the air and kind of threw him in the air, and Keith Lee landed on the announce desk. Shockingly, the table did not break. I love it because in the back, I guess in the back that was just a regular table. Maybe they reinforced these. But Baron Corbin attacked Matt Riddle, right? And all Baron Corbin was doing was punching Riddle, and Riddle just kind of fell over on a table, and the table broke. The table just collapsed under his weight. And Matt Riddle's not a heavy guy. But here, Randy Orton picked this guy who's every bit of probably 330, legit, and flung him in the air, and he landed on the announce desk, and it didn't break. So obviously, they reinforced those desks. And with that, Orton went on the offense. And Keith Lee a little bit later on, fought his way back. He pounced Randy Orton. Pounced him out of the ring. I love that move. Nothing will top him pouncing Adam Cole into the crowd at Full Sail at NXT last year. I think it was last year. That's still one of the all-time highlight reel moments in NXT. Adam Cole comes marching down to the ring, and you don't even see Keith Lee coming, but you see Adam Cole's reaction. Adam Cole sees this big guy coming at him, and he body checks him, and he just goes flying. I love that. So he pounces Randy Orton right out of the ring, and Orton fights back, ends up hitting the draping DDT. So he hits the draping DDT. Now he's setting up for the RKO. And he goes for the RKO. Keith Lee counters it. He hoists Orton up into the air, right up onto his shoulders, and down for the spirit bomb. Orton bounces off the mat, hits the spirit bomb. 1, 2, 3. Clean as a sheet in the middle of the ring, Keith Lee pins Randy Orton. That was the right outcome. That was the correct, that was the only outcome to this match, especially after what we saw on Monday night. Whatever could go wrong in that debut on TV did go wrong. If you're a fan of Keith Lee and you're worried, oh, please, when he comes to Raw, please don't fuck him up. Please don't fuck him up. When that show is over on Monday night, I don't see how you could be anything but disappointed. Even though he was hanging with the top guys, his debut went about as poorly as it could have gone. He needed to come back night to night. That was night one. This was night two. And the only thing that mattered was, did he win? And the answer is yes. Forget the music, forget the gear. Did he win? He did. And that's all that matters. All the other stuff eventually will fall into place. The skirt's gone. The skirt shorts are gone. But none of that really matters. All of that doesn't matter. Winning matches is the surest way to get somebody over. I don't care what anybody says. Winning matches is the surest way to get somebody over. It's such a simple thing. But so many times they bring guys up from NXT, or they bring in a new guy and they beat them on night one. Or they put them in there with a top guy, and now you're in a situation where you got a new guy, you got a top guy, but you don't want to beat the top guy, then why make the fucking match? How many times have we seen them do this before? That's one of the things about WWE or wrestling today that I don't like, as opposed to 20, 30 years ago. You know, back then when they had somebody new come in, they took the time to build them up and build their moveset up, give them credibility. If a guy had debuted on TV and they put him in the ring with Randy Savage in week one, you know, what does that do for the new guy? You got to build people up so that they want to see the big matches. But this is the match they made, and it was the right outcome. They did good here. They did good by Keith Lee. Randy Orton is going to get his match with Drew McIntyre. Again, when he kicked Drew in the head that third time on Monday night, they said he fractured his skull. I don't know if you noticed on the pre-show, Jerry Lawler was there. And he said that, oh, I'm checking my phone, and we have an update on the condition of Drew McIntyre. And he says he doesn't have a fractured skull. He's got like a hairline fracture of the jaw. Oh, thank God. Okay, so good. He doesn't have brain damage. I think the people who write these shows have brain damage, but thankfully Drew McIntyre does not have brain damage. But he's going to be coming for Randy Orton. Randy Orton is going to have his rematch with Drew McIntyre. That's already signed, sealed, and delivered. We know that. That's why I said Keith Lee needed this more than Randy Orton did. This was a match that Keith Lee needed to win. 6 out of 10. I'll go 6 out of 10 because the match was like 6 minutes long. It was not a very long match at all. There really wasn't much to it. So I can't in good conscience go higher than that. But, you know, let us not forget, Randy Orton, to give him credit here, Randy Orton is the same guy who put over Mark Henry in 2011 when Mark Henry was on the cusp of the biggest success he's ever had in his career. He was in the middle of his Hall of Pain run, and Randy Orton was the World Heavyweight Champion. And it might have been the Clash of Champions show, actually. He did the job for Mark Henry. Mark Henry hit him with the World's Strongest Slam. 1, 2, 3. It might have been the second one he gave him that night. But he won. He won the championship. And not only that, but Randy Orton lost again. The next month. He put him over twice. Two pay-per-views in a row, he helped get Mark Henry over. Randy Orton will do business when you need Randy Orton to do business. And at this point, Randy Orton, I mean, he's Teflon. He's a made guy. Randy Orton is not going to lose his spot. And he's smart enough to know that. So he did the right thing here. WWE did the right thing here. So this was good. We had Rey Mysterio and his son, or is it Eddie's son? Rey Mysterio and his son, Dominic, against Seth Rollins and Murphy. They did this match on Monday. It was interrupted by Retribution. We have not seen Retribution since. Retribution has been very picky about when they show their face, which is a little odd. Really no rhyme or reason. There's really no rhyme or reason for when or why we see Retribution. Retribution was not at SummerSlam last weekend. But they were on Monday Night Raw. Then they skipped SmackDown. Maybe Retribution, you know, they're clocking out early. They don't want to work as many hours. I don't know. But I was expecting a Retribution appearance here on this show because it kind of plays into the name of the show, Payback. And I thought maybe that's by design. Maybe all of this is building to a big angle involving Retribution or a reveal tonight. Payback, Retribution, they kind of mean the same thing. No Retribution. No mention of Retribution, really, as far as like, oh, we got security stationed outside. Nobody seemed to give a shit about these masked guys who are women who are running around, you know, attacking everybody. So that surprised me. I thought we would get some kind of development or appearance by them tonight, and we got nothing. We got nothing involving Retribution. So they did the match over again here, and the heels were very frustrated early on by the boy wonder, Dominic. I was very impressed by Dominic last week at SummerSlam. I thought Rey and Dominic had the second best match of the night at SummerSlam, right behind Sasha Banks and Asuka. And this match here was no different. Everybody in this match, I thought, delivered. I thought everybody in this match was just dead on, brought their A game. Dominic hit a flying crossbody early in the match, but the heels caught him. Rollins hit the Falcon Arrow on Dominic for a near fall. And Dominic fought back. He sent Murphy into the barricade outside the ring. He avoided Rollins and crashed into the barricade. Dominic fought back. Rey got the hot tag. In comes Daddy, who could not do anything last week. You know, his son even told him in that singles match last week, Dad, I don't want you to get involved, even though eventually he did. Then Rey got handcuffed, right? So now Rey, he's ready to go, even though he's got one eye. He's got one good eye. But Rey Mysterio comes into the ring, and he runs wild for a little bit. A little bit later on, Dominic caught Murphy with a tornado DDT. Rollins, though, took him out with the sling blade. Rey hit the seated senton. Rollins countered with a backstabber, or backbreaker, I think. And Dominic and Murphy, they were outside brawling around ringside. Rey hits a suicide dive out onto Murphy. Now the pace is starting to pick up here in this match. Hits a suicide dive. Rey goes for a flying crossbody. And as he's coming off the top rope, Rollins gets the knees up. And he gets the knees right up into Rey's ribs on the way down. Rollins hits the super kick after that for an ear fall. Rollins goes for a curb stomp. Rey Mysterio counters it. Rollins recovers. He goes for a pin. Dominic makes the save. Great save by Dominic. Dominic came in right at the last second and made the save for his father. And the heels threw Dominic and Rey into the barricade. So Seth Rollins now has Rey Mysterio. Dominic is down, and he's taunting Rey. It's like, Rey, where's your son? Where's Angie? Where's your wife? Where's your family? Rollins is a great dick heel. He can be a very good prick, I will tell you that much. So he's taunting Rey. He tags Murphy. He tells Murphy, I want you to kick him in the head. So he tags him, but then Rollins sets Rey up for a buckle bomb. And as he's coming in for the buckle bomb, Rey counters it. He reverses it into a Rana. He sends Rollins into the corner, and Murphy accidentally kicks Rollins instead of Rey. That's the big miscommunication, the big miscue of the match. on the part of the heels. And from there, it just deteriorates for the heels. Murphy is in position for the 619. Ray hits a sliding destroyer to Rollins. So Rollins is outside. Ray slides under the bottom rope, takes him over into the barricade. So that's it. Rollins is wiped out. And the rest is up to Dominic. Dominic comes off the ropes. He hits the 619 to Murphy. He goes up, hits the frog splash for the win. I thought this was a great match. Easily the best match on the entire show. Easily. That's the common theme between SummerSlam and Payback. It was Rollins and Mysterio and Dominic. Great action. 8 out of 10. I would go 8 out of 10 in this match. Rollins was pissed at Murphy when the match was over. He walked off. I said during my predictions, the family needed a win. This poor fucking family. Look at what has happened to them in the last, 3 months, 4 months. Going back to Money in the Bank. Rey Mysterio, as it was pointed out to me, I forgot to mention this earlier, but Rey Mysterio got tossed off the roof of Titan Tower. That's where his year began. That's where his bad year began. He got thrown off the roof, right? That was the first bad thing that happened to him. Rollins tried to put his eye out on the corner of the ring steps. That put him out for a while. Then they had a match, and Rollins did pop his eye out, or at least whatever gumball was living in his eye. So now Ray loses his eye, which, oh, thankfully they're able to save it. Then his poor son gets brutalized by about 35,000 kendo stick shots on TV a few weeks ago. Then a week ago, last Sunday at SummerSlam, Rey Mysterio is helpless. He is helpless to do anything to help his son at his time of need. He's handcuffed to the ring rope. He's got to just helplessly watch Seth Rollins stomp his son's brains in. This family has been through great trauma thanks to WWE and Seth Rollins this year. They needed this win. How one-sided can this be? I mean, what are we going to do tonight? Drop an anvil on their heads? Stomp their balls out? I mean, what are we going to do to these two? They had a win. They had to win. The babyfaces had to get their revenge. I'm not saying it's the end of the feud. It's not. Rey Mysterio and Seth Rollins are having a singles match on TV tomorrow night. And I said in my predictions, I'm predicting that Rey and Dominic are going to win, and Murphy is probably going to be the one to take the fall. That protects Rollins for his singles match on TV the next night. Wasn't his fault that they lost. He can blame it on Murphy. And that's exactly what happened. It played out exactly the way I thought it would, and it was great. I thought this match was great. But at some point, the babyfaces have to get their revenge. You can't just have the heels constantly getting heat on the babyfaces. WWE falls into this trap a lot. It wears down the fans. Like, we're waiting, you know? Sometimes you shouldn't have to wait 6 months or 9 months or a year for the babyfaces to get their revenge. So then they aired an ad for the next pay-per-view, which is next Sunday. No, I'm kidding. Am I really, though? Would you really be surprised if I told you there was another pay-per-view next Sunday? They would announce a new pay-per-view next Sunday just to fuck with AEW, because AEW has a pay-per-view on Saturday. But they announced their next pay-per-view, which is the Clash of Champions show. They announced it for September 20th. So in the ad that they ran, the date was September 20th. And I'm thinking, September 20th? I thought it was the 27th. Then they go back to the announcers, and Michael Cole and Corey Graves are talking about the next event, and they have the banner on the bottom of the screen. And sure enough, on the banner, it says September 27th. So for the record, the next pay-per-view is in fact September 27th. It is not September 20th. I don't know how that slipped past them. I don't know how that happened. That was a botchamania moment right there. And you're going to have six people who don't pay attention, who are going to be sitting in front of their screen going, where's the pay-per-view? A week early. They're going to be waiting. They're going to be sitting there all week. They're such big WWE fans. Like that guy many years ago. Remember the commercial on USA Network? The big Monday Night Raw fan. He worked at Walmart or Kmart or whatever store he worked at, Target. He was a big WWE fan. Remember him? He got the WWE logo tattooed on his skin. You got some mega fans out there. He'll be sitting in front of his TV waiting all week long. He'll stare at a goddamn test pattern waiting for that pay-per-view to start. Don't get the WWE logo tattooed on yourself, please. Please don't do that. I give it another 10 years or so. They'll probably come up with a new logo. You're going to feel really dumb. Don't do that. Please don't do that. So that brings us to the main event. That brings us to the main event of this show, which was for the Universal Championship. It was a triple threat, no holds barred match for the Universal title. And it was Roman Reigns, Braun Strowman, and The Fiend, Bray Wyatt. They announced this as a no-holds-barred triple threat match. Now, think about this. The WWE rules of a triple threat match, there are no disqualifications. All no-holds-barred means is, no holds are barred, you can't be disqualified. It's kind of the same thing, right? I mean, I don't know. I mean, aren't no-holds-barred matches, you can use weapons and stuff? Maybe I'm wrong. I just thought it was silly. You can't have a DQ and a triple threat no matter what. Just call it a triple threat. Make it false count anywhere. Give us a real false count anywhere match. They gave us a false count anywhere match last week that ended in the ring. They barely went anywhere. They went into the gorilla position. What kind of false count anywhere match is that? I hate it when they have these steps and they don't use them. So anyway, that's what this match was. They teased all throughout the show. They had segments. Paul Heyman's walking around. Yeah, Paul Heyman waddles through the hallway. You know, Paul Heyman is walking. He's walking. And Caleb Braxton is sneaking up on him, trying to ask him, you know, did Roman Reigns sign the contract? Is Roman Reigns going to be in the main event tonight? And Paul Heyman wouldn't give a straight answer. He would not give a straight answer, or he would play games. And somewhere AJ Styles is like, yep, see, I told you. So we never did get our answer. Heyman was teasing us throughout the night. So The Fiend comes out first. The Fiend makes his grand entrance. Somebody in the chat says, weapons are not holds. Look, I've never seen a no-holds-barred match end in a DQ because somebody brought a chair in. So I think it's all a matter of semantics and language. The point is, there will never be a disqualification in a triple threat match in WWE. It's redundant to add any other steps to that stipulation. So The Fiend comes out, and when the lights come back on, Braun Strowman is in the ring, and he attacks The Fiend, and the bell rings, and the match begins, and there's no Roman Reigns. So the bell has rung. The match is official. Roman Reigns is nowhere to be found. I just assume that Roman Reigns signed the contract, and that he'll just appear. When the time is right, he'll walk out. That's not exactly what happened, though, which we'll get to here in a second. So they're fighting now. It's The Fiend and Braun. We're basically getting a rematch from last Sunday, and that match really wasn't that good. So Fiend gives Strowman a uranage through the announce desk. This time it broke. I'm going to say Keith Lee softened it up. And it finally broke when Braun went through it. Fiend reaches under the ring, and he pulls out a giant mallet. This is the mallet that he used, or Rollins used, I forget who brought it out first, in that horrific Hell in a Cell debacle last October. I saw that mallet and I started to have horrible flashbacks. it's like somebody on a TV show or something who sees something, and then you get like the sequence where if they flash back to some horrible memory, like on the battlefield or something. Every time I'm reminded about that match, I get angry all over again. So he takes out the mallet, the Funhouse mallet, and Braun cuts him off before he has a chance to use it. So Braun picks up the mallet, and The Fiend gets it back. I'm like, would somebody hit the other guy with the fucking mallet already? And finally, The Fiend hits him in the chest with the mallet. I was hoping when he hit him with it, maybe a Ramblin' Rabbit would pop out of the mallet or something, but nothing happened. So The Fiend starts laughing, and he picks up the ring steps. He smashes Braun with the ring steps. They cut to the back, and we see Alexa Bliss watching the match. She is observing. She is admiring. I assume The Fiend, not Braun. She's twirling her pigtails. I thought this was foreshadowing interference or something, but nothing happened. So that story is, I guess, just going to continue on TV. But obviously, Alexa, the whole tie-in with Alexa, with Braun and or The Fiend, is not done yet. They're not done with that yet. Up the aisle they go. Strowman sends Bray into the LED boards. Both guys are down. They get up, and Strowman tackles The Fiend. They say, off the stage. Now, you got to put this in perspective here. If you have been watching WWE for any length of time, surely you remember the days of Raw is War, when they had the big stage, right? First time we ever saw the giant Titantron on the big stage. And that stage was probably a good 8 feet up. I remember when the New Age Outlaws put Cactus Jack and Terry Funk, or I'm sorry, Chainsaw Charlie, in the dumpster, rolled it off. It was like this big injury angle. Are they dead? Then they came back at the end of the show and ruined the whole thing. But now when they say, oh, they went off the stage, you got to remember here, this stage now, if it's 2 feet off the ground, I would be shocked. So like, oh my God, they fell off the stage. They fell 2 fucking feet. Shut up, Cole. Just shut up. 2 feet. They fell 2 feet off the stage. Big deal. So they're both down. Strowman drags Wyatt back to the ring. So back to the ring they go. And they get inside. Somebody in the chat says 18 inches. It probably was. I would say about 18 or 20 inches is what they fell. Strowman drags Wyatt into the ring. And he's going up to the top rope. Now, why Braun Strowman would go to the top rope when he's not an aerial guy, I don't know. But he decides now would be a good time to go up to the top rope. So, of course, he gets cut off. And Bray climbs up the ropes as well. So now Bray is on the middle rope on the inside. And he's setting up for a superplex. So he gives him this rough-looking superplex. And they do the ring collapse. And I should have known something was up. But I think I even saw... who was it? Might have been... John Alba on Twitter, but made the observation that there was no LED apron. Even the posts, like, it looked a little bit different. And that should have been a giveaway that something might happen with the ring, or maybe Retribution was going to come out and destroy the ring. Well, it wasn't Retribution. They decided to recycle the same damn ring collapse spot that we've seen at least 3 times before. I just thought that was lazy as shit. There are certain spots that you can do and you can repeat after a certain number of years. But when you get to the third time, the fourth time, and it doesn't even look as good, you don't even have people in the building to get that reaction, don't do that. It just comes off as so lame. So this was supposed to be like a big spot in the match, and it was like, oh, there it is again, the ring collapse spot. I just thought that was lame as shit. So the posts come in, and the ring kind of collapses, the ring kind of sinks in, and almost on cue, there's the big dog's music, Roman Reigns. And I said earlier on the podcast, I said, I love the idea of Roman Reigns going heel. I love the pairing of Roman Reigns with Paul Heyman. I was really interested to see what they were going to do with it on the, you know, what they were going to do on this show to kind of further that along. I said, but if this really is a new leaf for Roman Reigns, you got to go all the way with it. Get rid of the vest, which they did, but get rid of the gear, get rid of the music. All new Roman Reigns. So he comes out to his music. So same music, but instead of a vest, he had a t-shirt on. It's his new t-shirt, the wreck. What is it? What does the t-shirt say? Wreck it, Ralph, or whatever. Wreck everyone. Wreck everyone and leave. That's his new t-shirt. But he walks out, and he's got a steel chair in his hand, and Paul Heyman has the contract. And he signs the contract. But the match is already in progress. So, now again, it's WWE, right? So you can pretty much make up whatever rules you want. The Royal Rumble every year was, if you're eliminated out over the top rope, you're eliminated. Until 1992, when Randy Savage kind of forgot what he was doing, and he went to go chase after Jake the Snake, and he propelled himself out of the ring, but he wasn't supposed to be out of the Rumble. And the announcers thought he was gone. And you could almost hear the moment on commentary where somebody, Vince or whoever, got in Heenan's ear and said, he's not gone. He's still in the match. Because Heenan on the dime is like, oh, wait a minute. I think you have to be propelled out of the ring. And Gorilla Monsoon is like, well, I'll take your word for it. Shit happens. They can make up rules as they go along because it's not real. That's why all the people who shit on my idea when I said Otis is going to end up handing his money in the bank briefcase to, you know, Mandy Rose or something. Oh, well, I don't think he can do that. Because what do you mean he can't do that? It's a WWE. You can do whatever you want. That's like having a draft. Oh, well, somebody on Raw can't be on SmackDown. Somebody on SmackDown can't be on Raw. They change the rules all the time. They could have changed the rules of the match in the middle of the match if they wanted to. So I guess in the end, whatever. It's not a big deal, but I thought it was kind of weird that he signed the contract after the match had already started. How is that legal? I don't know, but he signed the contract. And so down to the ring comes Roman Reigns. And he's got a steel chair in his hand. And he covers the Fiend, but the referee is not there. There's no referee. Finally, referee comes. And 1, 2, Fiend kicks out. So he goes over to Strowman. He covers Strowman. 1, 2, Strowman kicks out. Now Roman is frustrated. Now Roman Reigns is frustrated. He can't get the pin on either one of these guys. So he goes out of the ring and he picks up his trusty chair. He picks up the steel chair and he lays into Braun Strowman with this chair. He waylays him with this chair. Gave him about, I think it was about 6 shots. Pasted him with it. Covers him. Again, Braun kicks out. So the Fiend gets up. He puts the mandible claw on Reigns. Reigns at one point was clutching his new teeth. He was clutching his new veneers. I'm not sure if he lost a tooth or what happened. Maybe he was just selling. I think the reason this match ended when it did in storyline is because the Fiend went after Roman Reigns' new teeth, and it really pissed him off. So Roman's like, we got to put an end to this shit right now. But he put the mandible claw on Reigns. Low blow by Roman. Breaks that hold. And Reigns hits one spear to Braun Strowman, and he pins Braun 1, 2, 3. And just like that, bye-bye Fiend, the new Universal Champion is Roman Reigns. And the poor Fiend. Yeah, I said in my tweet earlier when I put the link up for the stream, I said, are we going to see a repeat of 1991 tonight? Are they going to do to The Fiend what WWE did to The Undertaker in 1991, where The Undertaker beat Hulk Hogan for the championship at Survivor Series, and 5 days later they had their Tuesday in Texas pay-per-view, their little pay-per-view experiment that failed, which is why they never did another one again. Only to drop the belt back to Hogan. That's the only reason they put the belt on The Undertaker. It was all just an experiment to try to get people to buy their other pay-per-view 5 days later. And they put the belt right back on Hogan. And then Jack Tunney stripped it away. I wish Jack Tunney would have come out here. The corpse of Jack Tunney to make some kind of ruling here. This was the outcome I expected. I predicted a Reigns win earlier today, if you saw the predictions. I'm not a fan of taking the championship from The Fiend so quickly. I'm not going to write The Fiend off as being dead. But I will say this. Bray Wyatt has now had three championship wins in WWE. He was the WWE champion. He won that title in what I thought was an excellent Elimination Chamber match a few years ago. And he held the championship for a month. He had the shittiest reign, one of the shittiest WWE title reigns of all time. It was a completely pointless, dumb, lame title reign. The match he had with Randy Orton at WrestleMania 33 was dog shit. A very forgettable run. Last year, in Saudi Arabia, he wins the Universal Championship. And he goes on to defend it a few times, but again, a very forgettable, very lackluster run that is ended at the hands of Bill Goldberg. We all remember that, right? We all remember Bill Goldberg earlier this year. I know it feels like 500 years ago after the year that we've all had, but that was a very lame way for that title reign to end. It was going to end. It was going to end anyway, right? It wasn't going to go on much longer, but to lose to Goldberg the way he did, and now he wins the Universal Championship from Braun Strowman, and 1 week later, he drops it to Roman Reigns. I have to see if somebody wants to put a list together. Where does Bray Wyatt rank in the annals of people who have held the top title in WWE who have had some of the absolute worst runs, with that championship. It's kind of crazy. And again, I understand the second run. I didn't say the second run was a transitional reign. I'm just saying it sucked. It was very uneventful. And poor Braun, you know, 1 week with the championship and that's it, one and done. The Fiend is going to be the babyface in this story. The Fiend, I mean, there was, you look in that ring tonight, Braun Strowman is the heel. Roman Reigns clearly now is the heel. Roman Reigns, even the way he was acting in the ring. You know, too chicken shit to come out and be part of the match at the beginning of the match. He waited. Already he's like a chicken. I wish they would take the time to at least explain what has led to this. It's like they just snapped their fingers and everything about him has changed. I don't know that I would go that far with it. I like heel Roman Reigns, but I feel like there's got to be some kind of an explanation for why all of a sudden he seems afraid to get in the ring with these two men when for years he's been positioned as somebody who had no fear. Why is he not the heel ass kicker? Why is he afraid to fight a fair fight? That I don't know. I thought this match sucked. I thought this main event sucked. But it was the outcome I expected. It was the outcome that I would have gone with, which is to get the belt on Roman. You can't bring Roman Reigns back the way they did and then put him with Paul Heyman. And then a few days later, he loses. You can't do that. This was tailor-made for Roman Reigns to take the championship. And when they went off the air tonight with this pay-per-view, it was the Stone Cold Vince McMahon dynamic from the end of WrestleMania in 2001. We saw Paul Heyman and Roman Reigns on stage celebrating, and it was like Austin McMahon all over again. Think about what happened in the match with Rock at WrestleMania 17. Austin couldn't beat The Rock. He was desperate. He grabbed a chair, just like tonight. Roman grabbed a chair, and Roman hit Braun 6 times with it. Austin hit Rock like 10 times with the chair, and he got the win. He had to cheat to win. He had to take a shortcut. That's what they did tonight with Roman Reigns. I hope the heel turn for Roman Reigns works out a lot better than the Stone Cold one did in 2001, business-wise. We actually got some entertaining television, at least, out of that. We got Stone Cold doing comedy skits with Kurt Angle. I did enjoy that. But business-wise, it was one of the worst moves they ever made. So hopefully Roman Reigns in this role will have more success. But that was your payback show. It didn't need to happen. They did not need to do a pay-per-view 1 week later. That was my thought when the show is over. This is something that could have easily been done some other time. SummerSlam, Clash of Champions. Don't do this. Don't make a habit out of having a pay-per-view 1 week later. This should not become the norm. This was a very... I thought for the most part it was an average show that had some good matches on it, had one great match, but otherwise it was a very, you know, kind of ho-hum show with another weak main event. That's the thing. 2 straight weeks of bad pay-per-view main events. You know, they got to where they needed to go. The belt is on Roman. He could be the heel. I say ass kicker, but I mean, again, it looks like he's afraid all of a sudden. I don't like that. But now you've set Roman up for a rematch with The Fiend, and beyond that, you've got Matt Riddle waiting in the wings, Daniel Bryan if he comes back, Big E maybe down the line could be an opponent for him. Who knows where and when Brock Lesnar may factor into this. There are a lot of intriguing possibilities that they could go with Roman Reigns as the champion, as the heel champion. So I like that. But what we need on TV this week, we need that home run promo. That's the thing that I'm going to be watching for. I'm going to be watching SmackDown this Friday, waiting for that home run promo. Put the mic in Roman's hand. Don't just have Paul Heyman do all the talking for him. Put the mic in his hand and let's hear it. Let's hear his explanation for why all of a sudden he is a Paul Heyman guy. And if he's going to cut a promo on the fans, if it's something the fans did, this could be his Bret Hart moment when Bret Hart went off on the fans in 97 and said, "You turned your back on me, and the American wrestling fans coast to coast can kiss my ass." That was what really solidified him as a heel after that WrestleMania match with Steve Austin. Roman Reigns needs that kind of moment. There's got to be some kind of explanation. Why is he so angry? Why is he acting this way? Why is he trying to take shortcuts all of a sudden? Why is he aligned with the guy who was a thorn in his side for so many years? What changed? Maybe he's not going to heal on the fans. Maybe he's going to heal on the company. Maybe he thinks the company abandoned him. Maybe he thinks the company was trying to erase him from history. You know, they can come up with whatever explanation they want, but that's what I'm going to be looking for. I'm going to be looking for that one really home run promo. I know he's got it in him, but that's what we need. And they should do it on TV this week. Now, we had Rey Mysterio on the show. He comes from the 619, and we have 619 on the line right now.
Hey, Jason, how's it going?
Good. Who am I talking to?
Chad from San Diego.
What's going on, Chad? The hometown of Rey Mysterio.
Yeah, man. That was the best part of the show, I thought. I really enjoyed that.
Well, I think you're just biased saying that because, you know, hometown boy.
I was genuinely entertained with that whole match. I thought it was the best part. I actually wasn't even minding Braun and Bray that much until the very end with the finish. That didn't really, you know, make that much sense. But I can't say this was the best pay-per-view I've ever seen, but I think, you know, those Saudi shows were, you know, far worse than what we got tonight.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So let me ask you this. I assume that was your favorite match on the entire show. Was there a match you thought was the worst?
The worst? I mean, yeah, the Corbin match was, like, pretty lackluster for me, but I completely forgot all about it up until just now. That's horrible to say.
Well, that's the story of Baron Corbin's career.
Well said. But
Baron Corbin is like, and I hate even making this comparison because I like Chinese food. I love Chinese food. But to me, Baron Corbin is like Chinese food, where you're really hungry and you have it, and then a few hours later, you're just hungry all over again. It never seems to really satisfy you. That's Baron Corbin. I once compared Dolph Ziggler to a pair of used socks, and I have now compared, or Dolph Ziggler, I should say, and now I've made my Chinese food comparison to Baron Corbin. So there you go. Anything else?
I didn't think this was the worst show ever, but again, like, not the best. I watched the whole thing through, and I'm kind of just, like, thumbs in the middle about it.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, definitely the tag team match, though, definitely a match of the night for sure.
Awesome. Well, thank you for the call, man. All right, I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Awesome.
Have a good one.
You too. Baron Corbin, the Chinese food of WWE. I kind of hate that I even made that analogy because I love Chinese food. I'm going to have Chinese food tomorrow night, actually. But I'm going to be hungry 2 hours later. So that's why I made the comparison in the first place, you see. There is a reason why I made that comparison. Let's take a look here at some of these. Let's take a look at some of these super chats if we had any new ones. I used to have an easier way, where within the program I use, they would come in and they'd always be parked in a list on the left side. It's this plugin or this add-on for the program I use. And then it just stopped working. The live chat works within the program. That's still running. But all of a sudden, it's like showing the last super chat is from like two weeks ago. So now I have to load every time, like in the page on my YouTube console, and I have to refresh. It's a pain in the ass, but it's all good. It's a good problem to have. I do appreciate all the support you guys have sent my way. All the new subs, breaking 59K. I don't have any champagne here, but if I did, I'd pop the cork and I would celebrate with all of you. Now we have to start the road to 60K, 60,000 subscribers. Tell all your friends. I want to get there in these next few months. Let's go to 904. You're on the air.
Hey, Solo Monster. This is the never barefoot, always bodacious Zach from St. Augustine. How the hell are you?
So you are not bodaciously barefoot is what you're telling me?
I am both bodacious and barefoot right now, but I'm not usually barefoot.
Okay. All right. Now I hear that word, and again, I just think of Bodacious Bob from when they had Bob and Bart as the new Midnight Express. in WWE. Bob Holly. He was, I think he was Bodacious. Was it Bodacious Bob? I think it was.
He was, I think it was Bodacious Bob and Bombastic Bart.
And Bombastic Bart. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's another
I
one.
I think of,
that's another one I'd like to
I think
forget.
Of the rude lady from Recess, the TV show. She was stuck in something. She goes, oh, my bodacious hips.
Yeah. Well, you know,
I didn't know what it meant, but now I feel that.
That's
way.
Probably Vince McMahon was flipping channels one night, and he heard that. He's like, that'd be great, pal. We'll call him the bodacious, the bodacious barefoot. What they call the bodacious barefoot bro? You know what? The one thing about that, we were all worried. Like, he's going to go to the main roster. They're going to put boots on him. I mean, that whole thing—it's part of his persona, right? Well, now that they're incorporating it into his shitty nickname, I guess that means they're not going to change his look. Like they did with Keith Lee, so that's good.
Yeah, you pick your battles here, you know, especially as fans of both those guys.
That's right.
You take what you can get.
You pick the hill that you're going to die on because you can't die on them all. That's how it works.
You're exactly right. First things first, I want to say, first off, Pilot, fantastic recommendation.
Oh, yeah.
They are fantastic.
I'm glad you enjoy it. Yeah, I got messages from a few people telling me that they're happy I mentioned that. Again, Pilot. If you're into it, you'll see the kind of music it is. Because I'm into, like, a lot of the synthwave, retrowave-sounding type stuff. And he just fits right in there. And I had never heard of him before. And he's, like, this mysterious guy. Nobody knows his real identity. And I just find it intriguing. But his music is just fantastic. So I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Oh, no doubt. It is fantastic. Two things about the show. First off, Big E. Super stoked for the Big E push. That's going to be super cool. Secondly, in this house, you know, I've got a 5-year-old son, and we love The Fiend. We love Bray Wyatt in this house. It's kind of our thing. We've got matching Fiend shirts. It's our shit. We love it. That being said, he was at his granny's tonight. He did not see the match yet, but we're going to watch it tomorrow. I hate that, you know, they had to take the belt off him so soon. I hate to look at him as a transitional champion, but I would be remiss if I wasn't really excited for Paul Heyman guy Roman. Yeah. I don't give a shit about Roman, but Paul Heyman guy Roman is going to be super sick. And even he pulled out all the stops of the heel tonight with the kick to the nuts, the facials. He this is just kind of, I feel like, what he should have been doing for a long time now. And I enjoyed his role in it. Like I said, The Fiend is our guy. You know, I was a big Kane fan when I was a kid, and this is kind of like my son Kane, you know. I'm pretty stoked about it. He's not going to like it so much, not upset with how it went.
Well, you could just tell him, look, The Fiend didn't get pinned. Braun Strowman got pinned. So The Fiend,
right.
The Fiend is going to come back for his title because he never actually got beat. That's how I would explain it to him.
I will explain it to him that way, but we were really upset about Goldberg, and we really don't want to see him lose singles to Roman, but that's probably what's going to happen. You know, we're not stupid in this house. We love The Fiend in this house, but we're not stupid. We're going to take it on the chin, and we're going to keep moving on, just like we do, because we are bodacious, and he's barefoot a lot more often than I am, but well, he's just as bodacious.
Well, there you go.
Anyway, I will get out of here, Solo Monster. I am a first-time, long-time guy, and thanks for all that you do, and we'll do this again sometime.
Awesome, yeah, call in, definitely, and hopefully all goes well when he finds out about what happened tonight.
He'll be okay. We're gonna get through this together.
Yeah, you tell him to call in next time, and we'll have like a little counseling session here on the air.
You don't want to talk to him, Bob. Yeah. Okay. You do not want to bring that evil on yourself.
Okay. Well, it could make for interesting online radio here. You never know.
You know what? We have faces for radio. That's for sure.
Okay. All right. Well, on that note, I'm going to let you go.
Thanks, Tom Monster. Have a good one.
All right. You too. Take care. All the Fiend fans are going to be very upset tonight. All the Fiend fans. There's a lot of them out there. I feel bad again. Normally I'd be really upset, but you can't have Roman Reigns come back like that and a big heel turn, and then he just doesn't win. You can't do that. This is how it had to be. This is the match they made. They made the bed. This was the only outcome that made sense. The Fiend's not going to go anywhere. He's going to probably get his rematch, and he's going to lose again, and then that'll be it. Roman's got to move on to somebody else at that point. But who knows where Alexa fits in? You know, it could be interesting depending on the direction they take things in with her. You know, I was watching the New Japan show from the baseball stadium a little earlier. I didn't finish it, so I didn't see the Naito Evil match. But I did see Shingo and Minoru Suzuki, which was actually a very good match. Minoru Suzuki is a freak of nature. This guy, how old is Minoru Suzuki now? 52, 53? He's got to be early 50s. He's been doing this for decades. And the way he moves in the ring is impressive. He's quick. He's very fast. A lot of guys, when they get to that age, you see him in the ring, and you know it's kind of hard to watch them. It's hard to watch them walk on their knees and stuff. And there's Suzuki in there, man, and he's just he's fleet of foot. I'll tell you that much. It's impressive. And now he's the never open weight champion. So I'm not done yet watching it, but I have enjoyed. I saw that. I saw the Tanahashi and Ibushi against Zack Sabre and the Tai Chi. Was it? I think I saw that match. And hopefully tomorrow I'll be able to finish the rest. Amari Johnson with the $2, buy or sell, on the bigger badass in WWE, China or Ronda Rousey. You know, I enjoyed them both. But China, to me, is the ultimate badass. The ultimate badass female. From the moment she debuted, she was throwing Terry Runnels. She was throwing Marlena around like a rag doll. She was body slamming the guys. China kicked ass, man. When China first debuted, and then she was in DX, the post Shawn Michaels edition of DX, she just stand there. She looked like a total badass. How many women in the company now are going around beating up the dudes, aside from Nia Jax beating up Pat Buck? Pat Fuck, or whatever his name is. So, let's go to 520.
Hey, Solid Monster, it's Luke from Maricopa, Arizona. How are you doing?
Good, Luke. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I've called on the show before. I keep forgetting to say my name. I even have it written on a marker board, like Velveteen Dream. Say my name.
Well, I'll just call you the Bodacious Barefoot Bro. How about that?
Well, I am barefoot right now, but only because it's nighttime over here, and I'm going to be going to sleep soon.
Well, so am I. The quicker you make your call, the quicker I'll be able to go to sleep. So, what's your question or observation about the event tonight?
Well, I got several things to say, actually, but I do have to defend the Fiend on one thing. You mentioned earlier how the Fiend hasn't had any good title runs. I'm going to defend the second title run a little bit because he did have those matches with Daniel Bryan. He had a good match with him last year at Survivor Series. And don't forget, he had that great strap match with him at the Royal Rumble this year.
He did. And of the three reigns, obviously that's, I mean, it's not saying much, but obviously that's the best one. But you're also, Daniel Bryan, there was something, I saw there was a bug downstairs before. I don't know what it was. I think it was a water bug or something. That water bug could have a great match with Daniel Bryan. So let's just be honest here. He did have that great match, but look at the body of his run. Was it really that eventful or that extraordinary of a title run? Especially the way it ended. I don't think people are going to look back on that fondly.
Well, I think part of that
is because of the one match. I don't think they're going to look back on that reign fondly.
Yeah, I understand. Part of that's due to the WWE booking, and which is just sad how they book their champions now. Another thing I got to say, you know, they mentioned how Roman Reigns wouldn't sign the contract. He wanted Adam Pearce or whoever to fix the contract. I'm just thinking to myself, like, what was it about the contract that needed to be fixed? Well, what was it, a bigger payday? I don't know.
Well, they never said. I think they wanted to keep it vague just to give him a reason not to sign. That's one of those things I don't like. You know, they probably will never explain exactly what it was. I just think they didn't want him to sign the contract, so he had to find something wrong with it. What that could have been, who knows? I don't even think they know. I was reading something earlier that they had, I think it was from Fightful, that they hadn't even decided who was going over in the main event up until a few hours before the show. They hadn't even really settled on whether or not Roman Reigns was going to win or Bray Wyatt was going to retain. So, believe me, they haven't probably given much thought to that either. I don't think we're ever going to find out.
Okay. Two more things. All I got is two more things, and you're good to go. One thing, and it has to do with the United States Championship. Not so much like the match or the belt, but you know how before every title match they have that one like graphic where it says like, oh, United States Championship or WWE Championship. Mm-hmm. They still have the old U.S. title graphic from the older belt. That new belt's been around for almost 2 months. Are they really that lazy that they couldn't just put that belt for a new graphic? Really?
Well, they put the wrong date up for the next pay-per-view, so I think what happened is Kevin Dunn has been so focused and obsessed with his lasers and his drones and the Thunderdome and the camera cuts that he makes himself dizzy sometimes with all the camera cuts. And he doesn't pay attention to some of these other things. They literally told you the Clash of Champions is September 20th. It's not September 20th. So, yeah, they sometimes let things slip through the cracks. And I hadn't even noticed that. So you just pointed something out that I didn't even realize. To me, that's the least of their problems. Updating that graphic is the least of their problems.
Okay, and the last thing I want to talk about has to do with the Hurt business. You mentioned earlier that if Lashley lost to Apollo Crews, what would he do after that? I actually had an interesting idea. What if they just paired Lashley up with Shelton Benjamin? I mean, they're already paired up. I mean, like, in terms of a tag team, and they could go after the tag team championships. Now, obviously, Lashley is the U.S. champion, but they could still do that idea with MVP and Shelton Benjamin if they wanted to give them something to do. Be like a brief tag team for a little bit and go after the tag titles. I mean, Ford and Dawkins are our face tag team. I mean, in terms of the heel face dynamic, it could work. What do you think of Hurt Business as tag team or even tag team champions?
Well, before I answer that, Joey in the chat has an interest. I don't know if he's joking or if this is something he actually thinks is going to explain this, but he says the date error for the Clash of Champions show will probably be blamed on Retribution. I'm not sure what is to be gained by that, why they would... I mean, I don't know what that would accomplish, but maybe. Maybe there was a reason for it. I guess we'll find out. If we start to see more of these mess-ups on TV, then yes, it obviously would have something to do with Retribution, but I'm not entirely sold on that as being the reason why that happened. But to your idea, I'm not really a fan of it, and I'll tell you why. The tag team titles are worthless. I'm sorry to say. The tag team titles are more so on Raw than SmackDown, but they're worthless. SmackDown's even worse in terms of they don't have tag teams. And on Raw, they don't have that many teams on there either. What do they really mean? So now you're going to take two more singles guys, which we've seen time and time again, and you're going to merge them together into a team, and let's say they win the belts. Then what? Who do they have to defend against? To me, it's a dead end. It's a dead end spot. It's a dead end position in the company. It's why I hope at some point Montez Ford and Dawkins kind of go off on their own, because after a while, where do you go from here? They don't have this like plethora of tag team talent like AEW does right now. Now, their tag team division is very strong. I think WWE needs to abolish the individual tag team belts. I really think they do. And I think if they're going to do a draft or a shakeup in a month or two, they really should consider that. I like the women's tag titles, how they float from one brand to the other. I think you need to do that with the tag belts. They just don't have the teams. I'm sorry. You would have a much stronger division if it was one division, and whoever the champions are can go from brand to brand depending on who they're feuding with in a given month. You don't need two sets of tag team titles. You have no teams. Your tag division sucks. I don't want Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin just like, oh, we don't have anything better for them, so we'll just stick them over here. That doesn't do either one of them any good. So I know you're trying to come up with something for him to do if Lashley did not win tonight. I guess if he didn't win tonight, it would have been better than nothing, but thankfully he did win. For his sake. Thankfully he did win. So I would not do that.
Yeah, and I can definitely see your point. And before I go, don't feel too bad about the bad commentary, even though it was bad tonight. We could have been worse. We could go back to the days of Cole, JBL, and Jerry the King Waller. I watched some of those old Payback shows on the free tier network because I just can't pay for the network right now. And my God, were they insufferable. JBL in particular. But they were all bad, cracking jokes during matches. I would even yell at my computer, pay attention to the fucking match. So it could be worse than this. Believe it or not, this is not the worst. So have a good night, Cell Monster, and maybe talk to you later.
Absolutely. Thank you for the call. That was Luke from Cross Country. Yeah, they've gone through these phases before where the commentary is just... And tonight was one of those nights, unfortunately. Unfortunately, with Cole and them, tonight was not a good night for some of the things they said on commentary, especially the Shayna Baszler being the protege. I mean, there was so much garbage that came out of their mouths tonight. You know, and again, they're not like typically bad at their job. They can actually be very good if left to their own devices. But when you put these stupid names and these stupid things in their mouths and they have to say them, my God, why wouldn't you want your announcers to have some credibility? Why would you want to just completely shred whatever little bit of credibility they might have? I just don't see what that accomplishes. Dry Chicken, hearing about Matt Riddle's feet tonight has me thinking about Jake Roberts name-dropping the Flintstones on AEW Dynamite last week. Well, I think you're the only one. I don't think anybody else would make that connection. Maybe it's code. Maybe Matt Riddle has sent feelers. When his contract is up, maybe he's going to be managed by Jake Roberts in AEW. I hope he gets more TV time than Lance Archer's been getting. All right, let's do 908. No, maybe not. There we go. My fault.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, what's going
I'm
on?
I'm here.
I got you on. Hey.
All right, this is Walter Knott from New Jersey.
Hey, Walter.
By the way, back again. So I just want to comment on a few things tonight. I thought the Keith Lee-Randy Orton match was kind of interesting. I'm super happy that Keith Lee got the clean victory. Obviously, that was the right move to make. Just part of me felt that match was a little anticlimactic. Like, it ended too early. Like, it was almost like a house show match, as opposed to, like, back when Kevin Owens came up and beat, you know, John Cena and stuff like that.
It was very short. It was very short. And that's why I only could go as high as I did on the score. But I mean, as far as the outcome, I thought it was
outcome. Listen, I could not be happier with the outcome. I just thought it was kind of like, was obviously short. And again, I guess the only way I could describe it, it seemed like kind of like a house show match.
Almost. Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah, I think that's fair. I agree.
And then the other thing I'll say is, you know, I know a lot of people are complaining. And listen, there are logic gaps with that main event, with how Roman came in. And obviously the match already started. The bell already rang. And then the guy comes in and signs the contract, you know, 3/4 of the way into the match. The only thing I think that was cool about it was, if you think about it, the whole reason that you would make Roman heel, based on the things that everyone was complaining about 3, 4, 5 years ago, was that he was lazy and entitled. So if you think about it, to sign the contract on the way down, he comes in there, he complains when he can't win easy right out of the gate, and then finally he does get the win. But I think it actually ties into all the factors that people were kind of bitching about back in the day. And what's your opinion on that?
No, I mean, look, I think it's a fair point. I would actually agree with you. I think it's a fair point. Even to go back to the point you made a little while ago about the length of the match. I mean, I can't really disagree with any of that.
You know, and the whole thing, like I said, when it comes to the main event, like, was it a satisfying match? I don't think it was at all. I mean,
no.
Honestly, I'll be honest with you. I mean, the Fiend versus Braun portion of it, again, it felt like just this weird, sloppy brawl. Like, they just kind of, it was like a last man standing match, but it wasn't. Then they had that kind of crappy fall off the stage onto the pad, which was cliche. I mean, there was nothing outstanding about that match whatsoever.
Yeah.
But I still think they kind of got over it. Actually, I even think the laziness of Roman Reigns having his old music almost ticked into that kind of mentality where it's like, this guy is so lazy and so entitled, he won't even change his theme music. You know, to
just to piss people off.
So yeah. Maybe I'm thinking of it differently.
Just to piss people off. He's just gonna keep everything the same. That's part of his heel turn.
Extra piss you off. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't think that's where they're going with it, but I suppose you could look at it that way. Anything else? I want to keep things moving along. Is there like one key point you want to make sure you get through? Beyond that?
So before I leave, the one thing I want to say is that I think eventually they are going to change Roman Reigns' whole look and his music, but I think it's coming, and that's going to come soon.
Hopefully.
But thank you for having me on.
All right, you bet. No problem, man. I think it just happened, and so you may be right. You know, it may just be something where it'll take some time, but you know, if he comes back, normally you would come back, right, with the new look. He came back with the new veneers. So I don't know that they're going to really change much more beyond that. I think they like the way he looks when he comes out there. And I mean, what are you really going to change? You're going to send him out there in jorts? Well, it worked for Cena, goddammit. So we'll have Roman come out in jorts. Like, I don't even know that you could really change his look. But as far as the music and stuff like that, it's all part of the package. That's easy enough. You can change that. You know, that you can change. Now, I know we got Silver in the chat who keeps ignoring me when I ask him what his area code is. I don't know if this is him or not, but we do have somebody on the line.
I do believe this is me. Is Jason here on the line?
That's me.
Awesome. How you doing, Jason?
Good.
You've been listening for 8 years, mod here on the channel. Yeah. Finally calling in the first time tonight. I was on the line for, I think, an hour and 40 minutes, but that's all right. We finally got through.
I'm going to go to him next. We have somebody who's been on for 2 hours and 20 minutes, and I feel bad.
Okay,
so
wow.
Everything's all jumbled, and the lines are all jammed, but I promise you I would get to you, so I'm glad you're on.
No, absolutely. Next time around, we'll hit the zip code of 608. So I did want to touch on the show tonight. I think that it was a decent show. I think the rating on your poll was relative to the rating that I'd probably give for the show. I think it's a good 6, 7, maybe an 8. I think that's really kind of doubtful as well. I think there was a couple of fun things that did happen in the show, so I'll try to speed through it a little bit. But I really did enjoy the finish to Sasha's match. I think that Baszler, what she's capable of doing, I think is incredible. And I think that people are finally starting to convey that to Vince, which is great because we can see him doing what he's doing best, or doing what she's doing best, rather. And I'm enjoying that so far. I know that you mentioned that finish as well, too. Did you feel the same way with that? I thought that was pretty innovative.
With Baszler putting the submission on both of them?
Yeah, absolutely.
I loved it. I thought the match itself was good. I thought everybody played their part well, but the finish I thought was really unique. And it made Shayna look like a badass because she basically submitted the two tag team champions. The two women who, up until last week, were the Raw and SmackDown Women's Champions, and she essentially submitted them both. So yeah, I thought it put her over strong, and I thought it was a very unique finish.
I think Naya's celebration at the end there was pretty great. I think that they're definitely building for something with them. I think the dynamic's actually probably going to go in the way of two enemies disliking each other in the next couple of weeks. We'll probably see them starting to become fond of each other. But that out of just that craziness that Naya was showing, I was not expecting that. But I was kind of intrigued by it. I'm not going to lie. I actually enjoyed that. I'm going to try to skip through some of these so we can get through to the guy who's been here for 2 hours, obviously. I'll give a call in next pay-per-view. But I want to show him some love, too. But I wanted to also talk about the favorite match for myself, and it seems like the rest of the chat and the viewers at home, Dominic Mysterio. I think I wasn't able to give a call in for SummerSlam last weekend, but, man, I was so impressed with that match with Dominic and just seeing him, how far he's come to see that. I think it's great. I think Vince probably thoroughly enjoys it, you know, him being all about his storylines and the emotions that come with that. And I think the shot that they had at the end of that pay-per-view was great, and I think he did a great job tonight, and I'm really, really impressed, and I'm really intrigued to see where he goes in the next couple of years here. Obviously, you know, they take their time with people nowadays and him being Ray's son and all, but I was really, really impressed with that match tonight.
Yeah, I thought it was the best match on the show, easily. Easily the best thing on the show. And I thought he and Dominic last weekend was the second best match on the show. So I've been very impressed by Dominic so far. I think he's still very young. He's not as young as I thought he was, but he is still young and growing. I think, you know, over time, he'll probably get a little bigger, put a little muscle on or something. He doesn't have to be all muscled up, but he's got the basics are down, man. And if you're going to put him in the ring with somebody more experienced who can lead him around and stuff, then the potential is there for him to go out there and have an excellent match. And he doesn't look out of place. He doesn't look like a rookie. He doesn't embarrass himself. And he's Rey Mysterio's kid, so he probably should not be surprised by any of this.
Right. Yeah, he absolutely fits in. And, you know, after that brutal beating they gave him with that kendo stick, I'm sure he's found his place just well. Obviously, he's been around the company in the locker room for so long with his father being Rey Mysterio. But you can definitely see him becoming more comfortable as the weeks go on. And we'll clearly see that going into the future. Just the end here for the Roman Reigns match. I think we all saw Reigns winning. I think it would be uncanny or out of the blue to have him come back like that in the fashion that he did with Paul Heyman behind him, just for him to not win, you know, and to take that Universal title from The Fiend. I think the finish was I was able to see it coming through. One thing that you talked about, Jason, that gives things away quite often, actually not really gives things away, but can be quite annoying, is the camera cuts. And I did notice towards the end there when they were setting up for that superplex that those camera cuts were really tight in the way in which they've shot those ring collapses before. So I did kind of have a preemptive on that. And as that was getting set up, I was like, they're going to do it. They're going to go for it. So the excitement of it for me is really subsided, you know, because of how often they seem to do it. I know it's been several years since they did it last, but it's not the same when you do that over and over and over. And hopefully they can pull that back. We won't see that for quite a while. I think the other thing that people seem to get caught up in is that Bray it gets buried, or, you know, you've talked about this before on the show, and I've always wanted to call in and conversate with you, is that he gets buried. And I don't believe that's the case. I think if anything, nowadays Vince has been smartened up to the extent of what Bray can bring to the company. And I think Vince has this mindset of a bigger picture. And I think fans do forget that sometimes, and that's okay. But I think he thinks long-term, you know, for him, those total accolades or the amount of title wins or the exposure to him, that's, I think, more important in the story that person tells, rather than the short-term losing. I think that they did protect him, you know, having Braun take that pinfall. But I wish fans would understand that there's sometimes a little bit more to it. But at the same time, you know, we are talking with WWE, and not all the time do we get what we think should happen. So I do understand that. But I think that I'm interested to see what Roman's going to bring to the table. I think he's meticulous. And I also think that Lexi, there is the dynamic of Joker and Batman as well. And I think much as you don't want to see it, Jason, I think that we're going to see Lexi with Bray here in the near future.
Well, I mean, I think, I don't really think it's time for that yet, but obviously they're going to go in that direction. That's why I thought eventually you could do babyface Fiend. Not that it was never acceptable, but there was still a lot of mileage left in that character. And so I'm not a huge fan of them. Not a huge fan of them doing the turn this soon. And again, when I say turn, it's not a turn in the traditional sense, like he's going to be the old white meat babyface. He could continue to do the same basic things and cut the same kind of promos that he does. But clearly, there's a need to have a babyface because they're missing, I think, enough solid babyfaces on that side. And that's the role that they need him for now, and so we'll see what happens with it. I like Roman being on the heel side, so sometimes you got to take the good with the bad. But all good points. I think all good points on your part. This was good. I'm glad I got you through. I was getting worried there. I wasn't going to get you through. So.
No, I appreciate it, Jason. Awesome. I think overall it was a good show. It was stagnant at times. SummerSlam was better, but got to keep the momentum going one way or another. So thanks for taking the call. Get to that guy who's been waiting 2 hours, and I'll see you next time here for the next pay-per-view, Jason.
Awesome. Sounds good. Let's go to 484. He has been waiting a very long time. So I hope he's still there. 484.
Hey, Jason, it's Tyler Quinn Williams. Yes, I'm still here.
Good.
I'm not gonna lie. The other guys up there and stop talking. I almost fell asleep there. But yeah, I'm here.
I felt bad. I see, you know, you've been waiting a long time, and that's what happens when the lines get all jammed up on pay-per-view night, man. People all call in.
I've been waiting a long time before. So it wasn't the first time.
Well, now you're here. What's going on?
Well, not much. I got finished watching Payback the same time you did. This is actually my first time watching a WWE pay-per-view since WrestleMania, I think. I watched like a little bit of SummerSlam, but like this is the first time I watched like most of it through. I would say for the most part, I enjoyed it, which is kind of weird to say, but I enjoyed it. I would say the part that really stood out to me was really the women's tag match with Shayna Baszler she tapped out Bayley, right? But she had like Sasha and Bayley blocked into submission at the same time, which really stood out to me. I thought that was really cool. It really makes me believe they might be heading towards having Shayna be the one to beat Bayley for a SmackDown Women's Championship, which I have my fingers crossed for, because then we could possibly get Shayna, Asuka, and Io at SummerSlam, which would be amazing. The main event, I'm going to skip past the other matches. I don't really care.
SummerSlam.
The main event. Yeah, SummerSlam. Oh, Survivor Series, my bad. I'm sorry.
I'm like, boy, you're really planning for long-term booking here.
Oh, yeah, very much so. 2021 is where we're heading. We don't want to get through 2020 anymore.
I was starting to think that maybe you were on the line for so long that when you initially called in, it was pre-SummerSlam, and so you're still in that mindset of SummerSlam is not here yet. How long have you been on the phone for? But go ahead.
It's been 8 years. the main event was okay. I would say that it intrigued me more because of Roman Reigns turning heel, which I've been indifferent with, because it's like for the last like 3 or 4 years, I would not say the last year because I kind of started to get used to him at that point, but I would say I was part of the Roman hate brigade. So him kind of coming back and turning heel, I just thought was kind of weird because I was kind of ready to cheer him at that point. But then he comes in like at the very last second of this match to win it. I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess he is a heel now. So that was that. And that was the show.
I mean, he is, but again, I wasn't a fan of the way they did that. I just thought, especially the whole ring collapse thing, I just thought the whole thing was very lazy.
Yeah, well, I do have one thing to add in here, which I kind of saw while I was on the line. I feel like I'm already right by you. You probably would agree with me. It might sound stupid, but realistic. Do you think there's a chance that they put the title on Roman so that way they can have Goldberg come back and win the Royal Rumble and then do the match at WrestleMania 37 between Roman Reigns and Goldberg?
Oh, no. I forgot about that.
WWE booking, I feel like that's where we're heading.
Well, look, Goldberg is going to wrestle. He's got two matches on his contract through 2023, I think. So... And Goldberg can be cool in doses. The idea that Goldberg would win the Royal Rumble, I'm not interested in Goldberg.
Oh, I'm not either.
Winning the Royal Rumble. I also don't know that we're going to get the match, because I think, you know, had the match happened as it was originally supposed to, it would have been Roman Reigns getting the championship back, right? And getting it back as the babyface. Well, now he's the heel. So if Goldberg wins the Royal Rumble as the babyface ass kicker, and he goes on to challenge Roman at WrestleMania, the dynamic is all wrong. It just doesn't work, because you're not going to have Goldberg beat Roman. That's not what they're using Goldberg for. They're using Goldberg to put other people over, unless it's Dolph Ziggler. Then he can kill him. It doesn't matter. So
Who would you have win the Rumble at that point, though?
It's too early. It's too early to tell. I mean, we're still months away from the Rumble. I would prefer that it be somebody full-time on the roster who has never before won the Royal Rumble. That would be my preference. But if Edge is ready to come back, it could, who knows, it could be Edge. I don't think it'll be Edge, just because unless Orton's winning the title, clearly his aim is Randy Orton when he comes back. My preference would be not an old guy, not a part-time guy, somebody that maybe we're not thinking of has never won it before. That's what I would like to see, somebody new. Like we had
Drew last year.
Yeah, or exactly. And that was huge. Well, this year. I know it feels like last year, but he won the Royal Rumble this year.
Yeah, I know, right?
And even a couple of years ago when they had Asuka win the first Women's Rumble, and Nakamura won. He eliminated Roman, if I remember, to win that match. And boy, geez, I mean, he was, you talk about night and day for somebody, Nakamura then compared to now, my God. But that's what I would prefer. Goldberg winning the Rumble.
A little sad that is awful. At times I don't remember that Drew is the WWE champion, but you know what? I can't even say that because I don't watch WWE anymore. So never mind.
Well, forget there you that. Go. You just answered your own question.
Answer my own question.
All right.
I know you're about to go. You're probably about to go, and I'm about to go too. So before I go, you were talking about New Japan earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Summer Struggle. The show was good. I know you didn't get to the main event yet. Not going to spoil it for you, but if you thought that the first match Evil Naito had was subpar, I'll say that this match wasn't really too much better. I mean, it was shorter, but I wouldn't say it was really better. On the topic of New Japan, I am the guy who donated to you, I believe, about a month ago regarding them striking my YouTube channel. Just wanted to update you and tell you that my channel got deleted. So, yeah.
Oh, wow. I remember you emailed. Yeah, I do remember you emailing me about that. It was like the parent company or something. Yeah, from what I understand.
Yeah, TBSIE. They didn't hit me. They hit a few channels too. So.
Yeah. They're very strict. I don't understand why that couldn't be resolved. To me, that whole situation is just fucked up. I'm sorry that happened.
No idea.
I was kind of holding out hope that, I know you said time was running out, but I was kind of holding out hope that that would be resolved, but not. I guess it was resolved from their perspective, but not from yours.
Me too. Yeah. Well, that's why I ended up watching this interview, because if I had the channel, I probably would have been doing something else. But anyway, Jason, I'm going to let you go because it's very late and we're both on East Coast time. So it's 12:30 where we are. So I'm about to head to bed soon.
Yeah.
And I will be back for Wednesday and Tuesday when you go live. Thank you for all that you do. I've been listening for 6 years. Yeah, man. Thank you for everything that you do, especially during this time right now where I fucking lost my channel. Tune in again, hearing your voice every single Sunday has always been a treat.
Well, I appreciate that. And again, I'm that sucks, man. I'm sorry to hear that, but I'm glad. I'm
not your fault.
So. I'm always here. So Tuesdays, Wednesdays, I'll be here Saturday live again. So I'll be here. If you promise to tune in, I'll be here.
Great talk to you, Jason.
All right.
Have a good night.
All right. You too. All right, so we have a few more Super Chats that came in, including, was that Abdul? I think Abdul donated again. He said, you look so tired, dude. I am tired, actually, which is why we're going to wind down here. I'm doing the math in my head, but the time it's going to take to edit and for YouTube to process so I can kind of finish the work here. Get to bed. I got to wake up early. Yeah, it's going to be one of those days. It's going to be one of those days, but this is pay-per-view day. This is what happens, you know? It's going to be worse next weekend when I have to wake up to record a sound-off, another 2 to 3 hour sound-off after I review the AEW show live. Got all out. Saturday. All out. Let's see. Oh, Deadpool, James Herrera, $20. He says, I totally missed the pay-per-view tonight. I'll check it out tomorrow. Have a great stream. David Cook, Daredevil David Cook here. Just to say, I've been a fan since 2012. You're the best podcaster that I've ever heard on any subject. Wow. That is high praise. I appreciate that. And Dry Chicken, do you feel WWE sometimes devalue their wrestlers when it comes to booking finishes at times? All the time. What? I mean, sometimes. They devalue their own match finishes by abusing them. Case in point, the roll-up. A well-placed roll-up is fine. When you do roll-ups every week and use it as a crutch, that's when it becomes not so fine. They do that kind of stuff all the time. So, I think the answer to that question is yes. I think the answer to that question should be pretty obvious. All right, guys. This is the Twitter poll. One last time, please vote at Solomonster. 2,300 votes so far. 65 up, 35 down. And we're 2.5 hours in, and we still have over 1,300, which is incredible because I didn't expect to still have this many at almost 12:30 in the morning, but here we are. You killed it on the Super Chat, so I got to thank you guys for that. That really means a lot to me as well. And we broke 59K. I don't know how much higher we are. I don't have the number in front of me right now, but I'm glad we were able to do that. And now we get to move on to 60K coming up real soon. Everybody who I didn't get to on the phone, and we had some people waiting for a long time. I'm sorry I didn't get to everybody, but things get crazy on pay-per-view nights. I'm going to be live again on Tuesday night. We got the Fatal 4-Way Iron Man match to crown a new NXT champion. That's going to be sick. I can't wait. I'm going to be back live when that's over. The next night, AEW Dynamite, the go-home show, I'll be here. And Saturday night for All Out. As soon as All Out goes off the air, come back here, join me. And next Sunday will be episode 668 of the Solomonster Sounds Off. That is the podcast. I want everybody to have yourselves a great night. Be well. Stay safe. Hopefully you will be able to join me again real soon. And until then, I'm going to go get ready for bed. And I hope all of you do the same. Thank you again. Take care, guys.